An update from Cirrus Aircraft, Brent Wouters addresses the faithful. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. Yesterday, ANN CEO and Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell gave us some observations from the perspective of a Cirrus owner and an attendee at the Cirrus Owners and Pilots Association's Migration 8 last month, particularly about the presence of other companies which sponsored the event in order to reach the hearts, minds, and hopefully the wallets of current Cirrus owners. But Cirrus itself was also there, and CEO Brent Wouters talked about a number of things to attendees, including a mid-year report on how the company's doing. In wrapping up my conversation with Jim today, we'll get into that. Jim, after listening to Brent's comments at the event, where is this company headed for the rest of 2010?
That's a very good question. I don't know that I have an answer. I know that Brent is talking about a renewed emphasis on the customer experience. I know he wants to enhance parts deliveries. I know he wants to make the process much more customer friendly. He talked about a customer first methodology, but the one thing that the Cirrus community keeps coming up with is, well, what's that mean? And I think part of the problem is it's something that Brent has broached for the first time at this event, and they're either not ready to discuss it or still in the process of designing it. And as a result, there's not an awful lot that's known about what customer first means. It sounds great. Everybody wants it. Everybody welcomes it, especially in the parts issue, which has been problematic at various times, especially with certain particular issues that schedule-wise seem to have hit the head at various times. And so as a result, the customer experience and customer issues are becoming more and more paramount in discussions whenever Cirrus comes up. And I think Cirrus recognizes that and has signaled their intention to do something about it, but we're not quite sure what that means yet.
Well, that company had to make the shift, obviously, from its original founding team to, I guess, a more, what would you call it, from an innovation phase to a production phase.
Actually, I would call it an innovation phase to a survival phase.
Well, yeah, that too.
Part of 2 years ago, I mean, when the transition occurred, keep in mind, it occurred while we were in the midst of a raging economic downturn. Call it recession, call it whatever you want to. But the fact of the matter is they took a significant production environment and had to pare it down to a fraction of what it was for a significant period of time and keep the doors open. Now, the fact that Alan left as part of the process or was ousted or whoever you want to listen to on the situation, the fact of the matter is the fellow who was at least half of starting the company was gone, has created a great deal of disaffection and distrust in the Cirrus community. And while, you know, a number of people in the Cirrus community are just flat out happy to hear that their company is still alive and that they're not orphans. And let's face it, when the economy was really starting to tank, there were questions about who was going to survive among every single entity in the business. I don't care how big they were. Everybody was wondering, how do you survive in an industry that's being hurt by economics? But the fact that the very nature of the industry was being attacked by politics, media, and so forth, and it was very difficult to even justify what it was we were trying to do, even though in the middle of the recession, it still made a lot of sense.
Well, and to a large extent, I think a lot of Cirrus's early headway came due to the track record and areas of interest and charisma of Alan Clapmire.
You know, I don't even think even Brent's going to argue that one. You know, the current thinking is that now they've got to survive and they've got to watch the bottom line. And the question is whether or not you can watch the bottom line and be an innovator or whether they're mutually exclusive. And it's going to be particularly intriguing to see which faction wins out as and if the economy starts responding and the market for buying aircraft starts significantly improving. I mean, we're seeing a little bit and piece here and there of better things, but to be honest, it's few and far between and it's incremental. But if we ever start getting anywhere near the numbers we used to, it's going to be very interesting to see if just holding the bottom line is enough to keep the market alive or whether you're going to have to start innovating again.
Well, speaking of innovating, let's talk about for a minute about the JET program. Was there any update on that? I mean, I know that the company line all along has been that we're working on it. Obviously, some resources had to be redirected here and there, but are we, you know, we're looking now, at least from the reports the company offers, at a Cirrus, which is, if nothing else, has reduced the monthly nut considerably. And so it's not, you know, quite as big a monthly burden expense-wise as the company was a couple of years ago. But is there any sense that things are starting to turn around in the economy? Cirrus has said that, you know, orders and are improving and inventory is down to almost nil. And is there any progress to report on bringing the JET program back into the limelight?
Boy, that's such a tough question, and it's an even tougher answer. There are two camps. One camp says that Cirrus can't and probably won't produce the JET based on what's going on out there and the lack of money and other things they need to proceed. And then there's the camp that says that they're looking for cash. They're doing what they can. They're talking about building a production prototype in the not-too-distant future and getting that underway and getting that in the air sometime next year and other things that need to be done to get this program on track and eventually certificated and in production. But they need a lot more money. At this point, per capita, the major shareholder behind Cirrus at this point hasn't provided it. We don't know if they're waiting to see evidence of an upturn or a significant market to determine whether or not they're going to bring anything else in, but it's also very obvious that the powers that be at Cirrus are looking actively for money and trying to raise the money independent of our capita for the moment to get the JET program going. But there's no question in anybody's mind, and nor has Cirrus stated otherwise, that will the JET program proceed without additional funding.
Well, it's going to be ironic if the indication that our capita needed came from success over at Eclipse Aerospace, given the fact that they showed up at your owners group meeting.
And sold airplanes. I mean, they're doing some business. I'll tell you what was interesting. Piper sold airplanes there, and at least one of them was a turboprop Meridian, possibly more. I know they indicated a couple airplanes were sold there. I know there are some very good prospects for Cicada, some very good prospects for the Extra 500. I know of a number of Cirrus pilots who are now flying Matrix or Malibus or Meridians and working their way up. So there's definitely a need to upgrade. There's definitely a dynamic market. There's some, you know, 4,000 of these guys out there now in their airplanes. Heck, hopefully down a couple of years, we'd like to be in the market for something that would give us a few more seats and a little bit more speed and better weather capability and some pressurization and everything else as well. I mean, who knows? It's entirely possible, and it's a great area for us to head if, in fact, the economics dictate it.
We need to break, but when we return, TCM talked about a lead-free future for its engine line at M8. But Brent Wouters also talked about it in the context of his company's product line. More with Jim Campbell in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Jim Campbell about his observations at COPA's Migration 8 last month in Dayton, Ohio. Jim, Continental wasn't the only party talking about a lead-free future. Brent Wouters also talked about strategy within Cirrus along that same line.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to switch tables on you here, Paul, and then not go specific to Brent, although, you know, they obviously, there's a fair amount of dialogue that was devoted to the reason why they put together the SR-22T, the all-continental firewall forward solution to the turbocharged airframe. There was a tremendous amount of dialogue going on about the whole future of the fuel situation. The president of AOPA was there, and they seem to have finally woken up to the fact that there's going to be a fuel issue at some point. They're starting to make some noise about it, although one wonders where they've been for the last year. There were the head of the Canadian Owners and Pilots Association was there talking about the issue. There were other manufacturers and industry people talking about the issue. There's basically three camps. There's the GAMI folks who have a fuel situation that not only have they been working on, but they literally flew it to COPA and back. There's the Swift fuel scenario, which looks promising from some standpoints, and other people are calling it smoke oil, in probably more ways than one. And then there's the whole 94 UL area, which is basically, you know, 100 low lead without the lead. There's a couple of things that came up that were pretty obvious. One, there's one source left for tetraethyl lead. That's it. It's not even a U.S. source, apparently. It's overseas in the U.K. Sooner or later, one way or another, they're going to get out of that business. And then we're really kind of up the creek without, you know, sans propulsion. There has to be something done. We're reaching a pretty tough fork in the road where the only place to go is for the smaller engines to kind of step up and do what they can with whatever fuel survives, but it's the higher bore, like my 550 Continental in my airplane and so many others and Bonanzas and so many other airplanes out there and the Cessna Corvallis series and so many others. But these big bore six bangers and so forth are going to have a real problem burning the postulated 94 UL or some of the other alternatives without serious modification or upgrades. And while everybody says that's only 30% of the aircraft fleet, keep in mind that 30% of the aircraft fleet is burning an estimated 70% of the fuel. Those are the airplanes doing most of the flying. Those are the airplanes doing most of the business. Those are the airplanes that are in the air almost constantly. So no matter what, the solution has to look at these larger engines and what's going to happen. Now, there's a number of possibilities with some of the FADEC and computer-derived solutions that could probably do a better job with fuel alternatives than most. You know, the Continental TSIO 550K is a lower compression engine than the TAT, a Tornado Alley Continental. But at the same time, The best solution is one where a fuel could be brought forth, which would require little or no modification, and that's highly unlikely at this point. The answers, nobody has them. Everybody's got ideas. Nobody has answers.
I've always loved watching engine development go on, even among the small guys, but I think it's really interesting now that a guy with Rhett Ross's qualifications is at Continental, and Michael Kraft over at Lycoming is one of those rare, you know, top-level executives who came up through the engineering side. So I think we're going to see some interesting things happening.
I'm glad you brought up Lycoming because this is a company with raw talent, a tremendous amount of raw talent, a tremendous amount of innovation. They started showing some of their hand last year, but it was pretty obvious that there's an awful lot going on at Lycoming that we don't know about yet, at least on the record. And I'm excited as all get out to see what they follow up with this year.
Well, Jim, we appreciate the time you've taken, and we'll look forward even more to the big gathering in Wisconsin this year.
Amen to that, Paul. We look forward to seeing you there.
Jim Campbell is ANN's CEO and Editor-in-Chief and flies an SR-22. Find out more about the Cirrus Owners and Pilots Association online at cirruspilots.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.